I'm leaning in too much. I haven't done this in so long, I forget how to, like, approach a microphone. All right. I'm just going to start because that's what we did. We wouldn't have ever gotten started if we waited until everything worked.
And it was your idea.
Yeah, it still doesn't work. It's been 10 years. Hey, this is Swoopy, and you're listening to a live recording of Skepticality Live at Manuel's Tavern in Atlanta for May 9th, 2015. I'm here with my co-host, Derek Colanduno, and one of our other regular contributors, Tim Farley. What is that?
It's our theme song.
That is not the theme song I wrote 10 years ago.
We'll get to that.
Okay. It's very fancy.
This is a new thing. Well,
it's not new anymore.
It's not new anymore. In fact, a few people out there wanted us to change it by now.
Yeah, maybe we need to. We're going to change some things, actually. The next 10 years are going to be different. So, not that I don't love it. It's fantastic.
Really. You talk through the song.
That's okay.
Now, we'll start with this, right? So, technically, this is actually the day of our 10th anniversary, according to iTunes. We'll get to that. But when we started our show, that theme song you heard was actually written by a guy called Stymie Stemmons, who's part of the Daisy Dillman Band. But they gave us the song out of nowhere. It was kind of cool. They're very cool people. But before that, when we started our show, this was our theme song.
Yeah, that's it. So 10 years ago, if you downloaded this podcast, you'd play it back probably on something that looks like this. I turn it on, but it's long since dead. But you can see that it's a very large iPod. For comparison, this is my iPhone. So that's kind of, technology has certainly evolved, even maybe if we haven't. So that's kind of... And of course, my phone it gets even better. Tim's phone is really fancy. But yeah, podcasts were very novel. And
if you remember, way back at the beginning, iTunes didn't even have iPodcasting. When we started podcasting, we knew everybody who was doing it. We knew them all. We all talked with each other. And in fact, there was arguments about should we keep it named podcasting. People thought the name was weird. Then iTunes hit, and everything changed.
Well, Tim can probably enlighten a little bit about... So the first podcasts were made possible because of RSS.
Yeah.
And RSS was actually newish in...
Say between...
10 years ago.
Between at the beginning and now.
I don't remember the exact timing, but Dave Weiner... And those guys who were creating BBSs, blogs, and that sort of thing came up with this format called RSS. And then someone added the way to enclose an audio file in your RSS feed, and that was what created podcasting.
Yeah, that was kind of the prompting of Dave Weiner and Adam Curry.
That's right. Yeah. From MTV VJ from the original days.
Yeah, from back in the 80s.
Well, and so part of the controversy about that is podcasting was not well known and not well understood because it was too technical and it was too difficult because you had to program, you had to basically write your own RSS. And so it was supposed to be really simple syndication, but it wasn't that simple. It was actually pretty complicated.
And I don't even think... for the listener.
It runs
theory,
in the background now. I don't think most people even think about RSS anymore.
Yeah, right, no.
Let's try something. By a show of hands, who here has actually heard our show?
Yeah, there
are most of them, all right. That's good. So yeah, so way back when... before iTunes and through 2006, this was our logo. And we were just two kids in the basement of my house.
We're not kids.
We kind of were. We're not now. That's 10 years later. And then it was August 6, 2006. It's actually still on our note board in the office as when we became the official show of Skeptic Magazine. That was August 6, 2006. And then May 9th, 2015 is today. And we now reveal that we now have a mobile app. We've had that since 2008. In 2009, Microsoft, with their Windows 8, they have an app store. We got one of those.
Were we available? Was our podcast available for the Zune?
Yes, it was.
Show me, does anybody remember
who here
Zune
has a Zune? Nobody has
anybody
a Zune.
Have a Zune?
Especially the brown one?
Especially the brown. What can brown do for you?
Wow.
And now we have a new logo. Ta-da! We got rid of the picture. And we got
You're kind of downplaying it. So this started. It was just two people talking, you know, in our basement about things that we thought were important, and that was skepticism, promotion of science education, and critical thinking. And by mere days, Skeptic's Guide to the Universe started around the same time. But
we didn't know about that.
That was. It was a very small world then, and it was a very niche community, and it's really amazing, to keep using the amazing word, how far that's come in the last 10 years, even what's happened with secularism, what's happened with podcasting, what's happened with science. I mean, you know, many of the people that we had on as our first guests have gone on to do quite a lot of television.
Yeah.
Most of them actually have their own shows. One of our very first guests was Phil Plait.
He had a show.
The Bad Astronomer.
Yeah.
And he was on the Discovery Channel for a while, and he's now doing really great educational videos online with the Green Brothers.
Yep.
They do
Crash Course Astronomy.
Yeah, I think everybody has seen a crash course. So that's great. Another one of our first guests that summer, when we were doing these podcasts in the basement. I know it was summer because we had to turn the air conditioning off because you could hear it on the recording, and so we'd have to turn it off. Was George Traub.
Yeah.
And he was just a guy in a band who was really, really awesome. And he had a friend who was big into podcasts tell him about what we were doing.
Not just any friend.
Well,
wow.
A very cool friend.
Yeah. His producer, who's an amazing singer.
But from there on, you know, if you go to the amazing meeting, I believe that George will be the MC.
George is the MC again this year. Yep.
Yeah, his very first skeptic conference was DragonCon.
So, one of our other early guests that we met at a TAM was Neil deGrasse Tyson. And I think the thing is, he was a really amazing scientist and astronomer. Inside our community, everybody knew him very well and knew his work. But I think now most everybody
knows
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Everybody.
So, I mean, that's just kind of the power of what the few people that started doing podcasts, 10 years ago, were able to bring to a bigger consciousness. It was not just nerds and people doing these things in their basements. They were able to extend outside of that.
And not only that, now Neil deGrasse Tyson started his own podcast, and now that has now become a TV show for Nat Geo.
I mean, he's the coolest talk show host on late night TV now, and that's really amazing, and that's through people listening and showing that there was an audience for this kind of thing, even outside of podcasting. And it started being about our interests, and it started mostly being about us, but what's been great about it is the ability to grow the show into something way beyond that. And so it seemed appropriate that the logo shouldn't be us, because we have so many great contributors now that weigh in. I mean, not only Tim, but Eve Siebert.
We had to get new logo gear and things. We have contributors who pay now to become a Patreon, and some of the rewards are things like t-shirts and jackets and things. And because of that, we had to get a new logo, because, our faces as a picture don't work well on a hat.
Nobody wants to wear that.
No. It's just a little weird. So we have new website that's actually live now, and then anybody can become a patron, you get things, or you can buy them directly if you want.
Did you include the other cool logo? No? I guess you have to, like, to get the cool t-shirt with the...
Oh, the circle?
Uh-huh.
No, the circle... Yeah, there's actually one of those. There's a couple different logo things. And then, so of course, this will be episode 253, recorded on May 9th. That would be today. I will go live on the feed on May 12th, because that's Tuesday. And we're recording this live because you heard people before, so they actually are here. And then the first person up will be Tim Farley.
So what's interesting is we met Tim. Actually, he's a local guy, and he's been doing lots of great things for skepticism. He had started this blog, What's the Harm? We actually met him at the Amazing Meeting in Las Vegas. So and we actually met a lot of really great Atlanta skeptics, not at home first.
The same thing happened to me. I went to the Amazing Meeting and ended up meeting a whole bunch of people who live in Atlanta who I should have known already. And then a few years later, I had this idea of doing some stuff about skeptic history, and I didn't really want to start my own podcast, mostly because I'm lazy.
Well, not only that, you actually started a presentation you gave to many people about don't start your own podcast.
Yeah, well, meant somewhat tongue-in-cheek. But and I contacted Derek and Swoopy and said, hey, you know, would you like to do segments? And they said, yes, that would be awesome. When can you send us the first one? And ever since then, what's it been? 4 years?
Long years now?
Long enough.
Every couple weeks, I bug you.
Yeah, every couple of weeks, Eric bugs me. So I now do this segment called Skepticism Past and Future. So let's jump right into it. I'm Tim Farley of whatstheharm.net, skeptools.com, and virtualskeptics.com. And this is Skepticism Past and Future. And this time, we've got the skeptic history of May. What happened in May prior to...
There's a poll, right?
Prior to skepticality starting. So I'll kind of do sort of a countdown, some really old stuff. 290 years ago in May, on May 31st, 1725, a fellow by the name of Johann Bartholomus Adam Berenger, who was a professor at the University of Würzburg, found what is now known as Berenger's Lying Stones. And what these were they were, you know, finding fossils back then and learning a lot about them. But these were fossils that also had Hebrew letters on them. And so there would be like an animal and then the Hebrew letter of God, of the word for God. And he believed that it was God signing his work, that God had left these fossils for him. It turned out it was entirely a hoax set up by fellow faculty at his school who hated him because he was kind of a jerk, and they wanted to embarrass him, and they created, I don't know how many, but there's a museum where you can go see these stones, and fooled him, and he naturally got very angry when it was revealed and there was a court case. But it was a case of essentially a creationist hoax of sorts. He had written a whole book about these and why he thought God was signing his work, and
I thought it was Satan that put fossils in their room. Not God.
Yeah. So that was a good one that happened in May. 235 years ago in May, May 19th, 1780, here in the United States, in New England, there was what was called the Dark Day. All of a sudden, over all of New England, it got very dark, literally to the point that people were eating their lunch by candlelight, and they thought the world was ending. And for years, no one knew what caused this. There was some speculation that it was some sort of fire-related thing because people noticed sooty things. And actually, there was a study done in 2007 that verified that this was actually caused by a major wildfire, a massive wildfire. In the spring of 1780, they were able to basically fossil records and burn scars and things like that, figure out that there had been this giant wildfire up in Ontario, and the smoke had gone down into New England and covered the sky to the point that the folks in New England thought the world was going to end. So that was an early American apocalypse.
So it's Canada's fault.
We seem to have survived since then. 195 years ago, on May 12th, 1820, Florence Nightingale was born, and we all know her as the famous nurse, you know, patron saint or whatever you want to say, of nursing. But she also invented the infographic, as you can see here. This is an actual graph that she did of causes of mortality in the war, and her big claim to fame, if you look into what she did, was she brought math and statistics and study to the science of nursing, and actually studying what was going on and bringing science. It was basically science-based medicine. Florence Nightingale helped invent that, and she invented the infographic. So when you next time you see an infographic on Twitter, you can blame her. 100 years ago this week here in the United States, May 12th, 1915, the very first person to get a chiropractic license was this woman, Anna Mae Foy in Kansas. Kansas was the first state to actually license chiropractors after a long, many years of lobbying because chiropractors were not thought well of. And as you can see, this license says number one in the upper left. And that's
Kansas.
The very
Why
first.
Are you still? I mean, they're still at it to this day.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't until it was many years later before all 50 states actually licensed. I think Louisiana was the last state to actually license chiropractors. 90 years ago, on May 5th, 1925. Our old friend John Scopes was charged with a crime for teaching evolution in Tennessee because it was against the law under the Butler Act. What a lot of people don't know is that was basically deliberate. They wanted to test the law. So he deliberately provoked being arrested, and then they had the trial. And it was people wanted to challenge that law, and he became the test case. This trial was held in July of that year. 65 years ago, on May 9th, 1950, our old friend L. Ron Hubbard released his infamous Dianetics. There's the original book in his hands there, and there's one of the more current copies. And, of course, Scientology was later derived from this.
Nobody jumped on a chair.
No. And the same week, like within 2 days, 65 years ago, on May 11th, 1950, over in Oregon, this UFO and a couple of other like it photos. This is kind of a poor copy of the photo, but in McMinnville, Oregon was shot, and this was later published in Life magazine and became one of the most famous UFO photos. And of course, like most UFO photos, it's generally assumed to be a hoax with either a thrown object or something hanging from a wire. 50 years ago, on May 18th, 1965, Connecticut became the first U.S. state to mandate fluoridation. I tried to find a better photo than that, but if you Google image search for fluoridation, you get the most amazing anti-conspiracy theory junk.
Welcome to my industry. We have to deal with these people all the time.
So I just had to use a stock photo, but Connecticut was the first state. I think the 12 or so states actually mandated statewide, and then most people do it by jurisdiction, but 35 years ago in 1980, the World Health Organization officially declared smallpox eradicated. The last case was in the fall of 79, and they waited a few months to make sure that nothing recurred and declared that smallpox was gone, and it was the first disease that was completely eradicated from Earth via vaccination. 30 years ago, in May 17th, 1985, this is a little more obscure story. A woman by the name of Julie Christopherson Tichborne sued the Church of Scientology.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
She won a $39 million fraud verdict on May 17th. And just a few days later, thousands of Scientologists arrived in Portland and had what they called the Portland Crusade, the International Crusade for Religious Freedom, because they believed they're
Sound familiar?
Yeah. Huh?
Sound familiar?
Yeah. And in some of these photos, you can see Chick Corea in the upper left, Edgar Winter on the lower left. That's Karen Black up there. Frank Stallone is in these photos, Al Jarreau. They all came and did concerts. So it was a big deal for many weeks. And I don't know if they're... campaign was successful, but the judge had second thoughts and undid the verdict a few weeks later, and it was later settled out of court, so we don't know how much money she got, but it was I don't know if you'd say a turning point, but a major event in the history of Scientology. 15 years ago, on May 5th, 2000, a conjunction between several planets in the solar system destroyed the Earth. Oh, no.
We're all dead. Didn't you know?
No, it didn't. But there's an actual picture of what happened.
Polar ice shit.
There's the...
Oh, ice. The ultimate disaster.
What Richard Noon said would happen. The interesting thing is, I don't know if he lived here in Georgia, but I found an article where he said he was going to hide out on May 5th, 2000 in Ellijay. here in Georgia. He had bought a cabin, and he had decided that the North Georgia mountains were a good place to hide.
Lots of people think that.
Yeah.
How cool would it have been if he was right about this? We would have had ice instead of global warming.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a great website out there called A Brief History of the Apocalypse that lists all the times people predicted the end of the world, and it's up to, you know, several thousand times at this point. So, and then, of course, skepticality came along. Just a few interesting little tidbits that I wanted to point out that have happened in skeptic history since skepticality started. The Montel Williams show ended.
Oh, he finally apologized for.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted to point it out is recently Montel Williams apologized for pushing Sylvia Browne or some of the major mistakes that she'd made. And there was a very interesting, I think I tweeted it today, very interesting reveal on one of her major mistakes was on the Cleveland kidnapping case where those women were kidnapped and held in that house for many, many years. And the woman, the mother of one of the women who had been kidnapped was went on the show to talk to Sylvia Browne, and Sylvia told her her daughter was dead, and of course she was revealed to be alive a couple years ago when they rescued them. The interesting thing that came out just in the last few weeks, the kidnapped woman watched the Montel Williams show on TV from inside the house, and she was a fan of Sylvia Browne and was so glad that her mother was going to be on the show, and then was devastated to hear Sylvia Browne say that she was dead on the air. Could you imagine that? You're trapped in this house hoping that your mom is going to find a way to get you out, and then this woman says she's dead, you're dead.
Have they asked her if she still believes in psychics?
That's a good question. I don't know if anybody has asked her that. She's got a book out that's got her whole
it's so completely meta.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing that's happened since Skepticality's been on the air, Andrew Wakefield was struck off and is no longer a doctor in the UK on Woo-hoo! May 24th, 2010. These are all things that happened in May.
Everybody knows who he is, right?
Wakefield was the guy who did that terrible, terrible study with only 12 kids that claimed that the MMR vaccine caused some sort of autism-related disorder. Absolutely terrible study. Later, several of the authors retracted it, then the journal completely retracted it, and then finally in 2010 he was struck off. He's no longer a doctor who can practice in the UK. Still out there pushing his crackpot theory. And then the Oprah Winfrey show ended also during Skepticality's run on May 25th, 2011. This was not that episode, but this was, of course, a memorable skeptic-related episode when Tom Cruise jumped on the couch. So I always do a future segment on my segment, talk about new technology and future stuff, but I wanted to talk about kind of the future of podcasts. A couple years ago, I did a survey of podcasts. Skepticality and Skeptic's Guide both started the same week in 2005, and I went through the whole history and found as many as I could skeptic podcasts. Now, the problem with skeptic podcast is what is a skeptic podcast? There's so many kind of related fields. You know, people who are campaigning for atheism, people who are anti-theists, if you want to make that distinction. Secularism, church-state separation, skepticism, just plain old science podcasts that occasionally cover pseudoscience. And so I kind of sort of picked and chose, and this was the graph I ended up with. And what I found, it seems like there's at least 100, probably more than 100. The interesting stat was when I did this stats in 2012, if you had tried to listen to everything, you wanted to listen to all the skeptic podcasts, all 100 of it, it would take you 2.5 hours a day, every single day, to keep up. Probably higher than that now. And now we have many, many podcasts, several of them based here in Atlanta, like Monster Talk and American Freethought, but many, many other great podcasts out there, and I encourage you to look for them. That's my segment. I am Krelnick on Twitter and Facebook, so follow me, and I post skeptic history things nearly every day.
This is Bob Blaskowitz
and Eve Siebert
from VirtualSkeptics.com, and skepticalhumanities.com. And we are wishing warm congratulations to Swoopy and Derek for an amazing achievement. 10 years is nothing to sniff at. Eve just sniffed. So...
I was expecting sneeze, and I got confused.
Okay. Sneeze at or sniff at? Did I mess up? Are they both things?
Yes.
Okay. 10 years is nothing to make nose noises at. And, you know, I remember, like it was yesterday, the first time that I listened to Skepticality, it was, I think it was 2009, and I was flying down the highway towards Atlanta. Eve was trailing in, she was leading, in the car in front of me,
Nope. Memory is faulty, it turns out, Bob. The first time we heard Skepticality was not when we were moving to Atlanta, but when we were visiting to look for a place to live in Atlanta.
Oh. I'm gonna have to say that you're wrong, because that's just not how I remember it. And of course, if I've got nothing out of Skepticality, it's that all experience is relative. Whatever is true for me, right? That's what I was going for?
Yeah. Your reality is the real one.
Okay, that's good. That's what I was hoping. It's real enough.
Everyone else's memory
you
is
you guys are
infallible.
Figments. You're figments of my holodeck. You know, when we were going down to Atlanta for the first time, we had no idea, really, that Skepticality was based in Atlanta. We really were kind of neophytes to the skeptical movement. We'd made some contact with people in St. Louis, where we're moving from, but we hadn't gone to a meetup or anything like that. And we certainly didn't know that the show had already had such a large impact, or, you know, the things that had transpired between the starting of the show and in 2009, namely Derek coming back from severe illness.
You know, it almost seemed like discovering Skepticality on the way to our new life in Atlanta, it almost seemed like fate. If, you know, we weren't skeptics and we believed in fate, which we don't.
Right.
Because we're skeptics.
Right. We didn't realize that skepticism was such a, you know, that Atlanta was such a hotbed of skepticism. So once we got down there, and it was only a few weeks before the semester started, we arrived in Atlanta. I was going to be teaching at Georgia Tech. And we started hearing rumors about this thing coming up.
Called DragonCon.
Which sounded really cheesy, and we didn't know anything about it. But it sounded like...
Something to do.
Yeah, there's something to do, that there might be skeptics there. And even some skeptical programming. So, you know, we made the effort, went down to a packed city, and
spent 100 hours in line.
And I think we're still in line. And, you know, suddenly, oh my gosh, there are people that we'd seen on Penn and Teller's bullshit.
You mean the slave Leia's?
Because of Derek and Swoopy, and I'm not even sure that I'd connected Skepticality to the organizers of the Skeptic Track at that point.
We're kind of dim.
Yeah, it takes a while.
Recognizing things like names, you know, how many people do you meet who are named Swoopy? Every day.
I know. I bumped into 3 on the way home. So that, you know, there was a whole slate of skeptical programming being run, I believe, by Derek at that time. And it was DragonCon that introduced us to the Atlanta skeptics who had a strong presence there, as well as kind of a wider organized community of skeptics. And that was something I was kind of unaware of. It was refreshing to end up with your tribe.
And gradually we started to insinuate ourselves into Atlanta skeptics and discovered Skepticamp. That was exciting.
Yeah, well, we ran into Reed, the organizer, at that first DragonCon.
Right.
It was over Chinese food in the food court.
It's true.
That will mean something to people who have been to DragonCon.
Okay. And then we discovered that there was a Skepticamp in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and we went to it. And I believe that would count as our very first foray into participating at a skeptic event.
Yeah. I don't think that this story is unique. Swoopy and Derek's efforts to publicize and popularize rational thought and to promote a respect for evidence has turned on innumerable people to skepticism. Many who have had a skeptical bent and might not have realized that there were other people who are like them out there. we're grateful for their efforts and proud to contribute to the larger effort of celebrating reason, evidence, and science.
And the humanities.
Also the humanities. Also good evidence in the humanities. We also dig that too. Thank you guys. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Yay.
So now we have stupid skepticality history. Yeah. Our first guest was Full Plate, May 19th, 2005. The episode was called Bad Astronomy. Not quite stupid, but just tidbits. Our most downloaded episode was Trump, A Penny on the Gate. It was May 22nd, 2012.
Really?
Yeah, it was Deborah Simpson and John Zeller. What I didn't realize when this person sent me their book is that the Heaven's Gate people were very active here in Atlanta.
No, wait a minute. I think I recall something about talking about Heaven's Gate's connection to Atlanta when we talked to John Ronson.
Yes,
that was later on. About the men who stare at ghosts.
Yeah, that was later on.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then later on we had...
What are the odds of that?
Exactly. See? Can I go back to their thing?
What are the odds of a skeptic podcast covering the same topic?
Who knows?
Those are probably really good.
And another crazy skepticality things. We both have asteroids named after us.
Asteroid Tim.
And yes, it's real. You can actually go to NASA's website and go to their small body database, and you can look them up. They're there. You can actually find, they actually have an animation of where they are right now.
So if any of our asteroids ever cause a threat or going to impact, if it's ever our fault.
I don't want it to destroy the Earth. I just want it to like hit like Russia or something, like one of those things, and just to like go, Kalanduno hits Russia or something like that. Or wherever. Some small island out there.
You just
somewhere.
Want to show up in a dash cam.
Yeah, exactly. And we've been podcasting since before iTunes had podcasts. We told you that already. By the way, the first episode was actually May 7th. For some reason, iTunes has as May 9th, which is today. So I guess it's the official, according to Apple, 10th anniversary day. The first episode we actually put out, we called it Odd Leader. But in the feed, it's called All About Gandhi under Alternative Medicine.
Well, but that was a teaser, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I know. So it's funny that in iTunes, it's one thing and another. So it's kind of fun. And our first one-off show done by Swoopy solo was called Whimsicality, which people still send me emails and saying, when's she going to do that again? And it was called Rock. And it was actually like our fourth episode. I thought we had been doing it longer than before then. But no, we weren't. So I think it was because you were inspired by our trip to Hawaii and you did a whole
thing. That's right. Yeah, we saw the petroglyphs and I was talking about
rock.
How people used to even, you know, before social media say, this is me, I'm here.
And yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
We always had the idea to have our show as like an audio magazine. So now that we have all the segments, is actually the way
yeah,
we wanted
it. Yeah, it is. It's now finally what we wanted it to be. We used to do different segments called Something Old, Something New, Something Borrowed, Something Blue.
We're getting to that.
Oh, are we doing that
yeah.
again? Oh, okay.
Because we started with Tim Kammer and Dave Hitt doing segments, if you remember that. Dave Hitt started his own podcast, and so did Tim Kammer. Tim Kammer was actually a radio DJ guy, but he liked skeptical stuff, so he did segments and sent them to us. And Dave has his own show now. So. And then we talked to Tim Farley. We told you that all about that. And Bob Carroll used to do a segment. If you don't pay attention or you don't know who he is, he's a guy who does the Skeptics Dictionary, the print version and the online version. He had to stop because he's doing a lot of treatments for cancer, so he doesn't have the time or the health to do it anymore. And we also had Heather Henderson, who sings with Penn Jillette in her band, but she has no time either. So, and then we did we used to do every episode, do the Something Old, Something New, Something Borrowed, and Something Blue.
That's right.
So we never used the forgotten last part of that thing. People know it for weddings, right? Something.
What would you
old,
do with
something
that?
New,
the
something
blue
borrow,
part was just an excuse to talk about blue. Something slightly naughty.
Does anybody know that the last part of that nobody knows about is called?
Yeah, brides still do this.
They do. I didn't know about that.
Brides still do.
And a sixpence in your shoe. I didn't know about that at all.
Women know these things.
I didn't know about it, so that's the reason why I didn't do it. Not that I would never know.
Yeah, I wouldn't know what to do.
Let that not ruin our fun.
Okay.
Something old is us. We're old now.
We are not old.
Well, 10
I'm
years.
Old.
Okay.
Tim's old. We're not old.
For podcasting, we're old.
No, for podcasting, we are old. In fact, our feed is hosted by and has always been hosted by a group called Liberated Syndication.
Yeah.
And they've been around as long as podcasting has been around. They're still great. Wizard Media is part of them. They help create the apps and things like that that if we put them out there on the App Store, podcasters can do this. You can add extras in the app. It was a way for podcasters who traditionally did this for free to get some revenue. So they also started doing embedded ads into podcasting early. Audible was our first, and yeah. It's probably still a
now
sponsor.
And then.
Yeah,
like I said.
It doesn't do much. We only ever said that if the show broke even, we were happy. If it paid for hosting itself, that was fine
for the most part.
So. Something old as podcasters go. Libsyn called us OG podcasters.
Yes.
Neil deGrasse Tyson called us the grandparents of podcasting.
Well, the first time we met Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Which I'm sure he meant that in a nice way. But
yes. The first time we met Neil deGrasse
maybe
Tyson,
a little.
He geeked fanned out on Swoopy.
Well, I didn't know that he sent me an email in 2005 because I didn't see it.
The day
and sure enough, I dug it out, and I still have it. He did. He
sent it the day I had my nanners in blue.
Heard our podcast, liked it, sent us some fan mail in 2005, and it was during the time that Derek was in the hospital.
It was the day.
And so I didn't get it, but he told me about it, and he's like, no, you check. I emailed you. And, and sure enough, he had. So it was very, very flattering.
I say something borrows you because I haven't had you on the show for a while.
That's right.
And where have you been doing? What do you? Why you have not been on the show?
Well, you know. well, again, podcasting is a thing that you can do if you've got the time.
She's shy. She doesn't want you to say. How many? What is that? Something to do with A's and a lot of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we started the show, I was not a student, and now I'm you know, finishing my second major, going to nursing school. So, and that takes a lot of time, and I also, you know, work outside the home. Producing the show when I used to produce it took, you know, as much as a full-time job, because when you're a podcaster, instead of just sitting in front of a microphone, everything that we ever did on the show was scripted, so I wrote it. I produced it. Somebody was complimenting Neil deGrasse Tyson on interviewing, I think, Jon Stewart. And what he came out and said is, it's not magic. I read the book. I did the work. If you do the work, you know, you can be a really good interviewer. And he is. You have to read the book. You have to do the work. I've learned so much from doing the show because of all the books that I've read and all of the people I've gotten to talk to. And that was the best part about doing this. And that's the part about it that I miss. But it's, you know, it's a labor of love, and it's hard work. And so for the people who've been able to make a job out of it, and a lot of people have, that's really amazing, but it doesn't pay our bills, and so, you know, I have to do other things. Plus, you became able to do it.
Yes, well, and then also I found it funny when you went to your classes. Now and then you get a professor who, like, talks about.
I finished up. I'm just finishing up my bachelor's in psychology at Kennesaw State, and it's really great to see all the things in current textbooks that are awesome. James Randi is in quite a few textbooks. One of the books that I read was written by Carol Tavris. So there's a lot of overlap, and I always look in the back. Richard Wiseman cited a lot for his work. Yeah. So it's out there, and some of it's getting taught. A lot of it, there's also a lot of bad stuff out there that's getting taught. So we need to keep working on it. I've had other things to do, and the other thing was it's never been about us. You know, we started this show, but it's never been about us. It's about the people that we talk to, and now it's about this team of people doing stuff. So it's great.
I remember way back at the beginning, like one of our first episodes, we had some kid on because he emailed us about stuff we got wrong. And an episode we had about the video game controversy when Grand Theft Auto came out.
Oh, yeah. There's two things. If you do start a podcast, don't ever talk about diets.
Diets
and don't
video
talk
games.
About video games. And this is kind of...
Still to this day, the only time we've ever had negative feedback was when we talk about anything to do with diets or video games. That's it. Huh. We could talk about anything else, and people would like, oh, that
yeah,
was
stuff, that stuff that
great
I think
points. I love this, but no.
Way more inflammatory, yeah. And they really don't care about it. But it's like, no, you got that wrong, and it was some actual kid. I think he was like 14, I mean, and I'm like...
We called him and recorded an interview with him.
Tell us how we got it wrong. Yeah. And so that's the cool stuff you get to do.
So I figured something blue could be monkey news.
Yeah, you were telling me about this monkey, but I don't think it's that new. So one of the things that I used to do when the show was new was I did a segment just because about monkey news. It was usually actually technically primate news because it wasn't very often monkeys.
Actually,
it was
one of my bullet points.
Yeah, no, but technically that wasn't about a monkey. Skeptics aren't pedantic at all. So
let us be honest. Our monkey news was really primate news.
I'm glad, that lesson from all the email that we got about that. No, it's true. But I stopped doing it because Penn Jillette started doing
Monkey Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then before that there was, and then shortly after we started a show, what's his name?
Ricky Gervais.
Yeah.
That's right.
And I've had many people sent me emails like, I looked into it, Scooby did it first.
Yeah, but that's fine. But when it's not new anymore, I wasn't going to do it anymore. Yeah, so that's fine. I couldn't compete with Ricky Gervais, nor did I want to.
One of the first Monkey News at the Max Planck Institute, there's a neuroscientist who is now said that he's quitting all primate research.
For ethical reasons?
He was widely known as one of the best public communicators on why they should use it. So it was very surprising. This guy said, no, I'm only going to do it on rodents and now. That's it.
Okay. Because he didn't think it was right.
He didn't think it was right. And you think you can do it with rats. The thing is, I guess in Europe, there's a lot of people who are really upset about this because they think that it's going to set back their neuroscience a lot because this guy was the guy.
Well, we've had several shows about animal ethics. That's another great thing about doing this show is as science has evolved and changed and new things have come along, you know, if you're really looking at it, you can really see the influence and things you wouldn't expect to change. I wouldn't expect that story to come out. But that's interesting. A lot of people have said that.
But doesn't surprise me because
we were moving in that direction. But I'm surprised that that's actually happening.
A couple years ago, I had a guy on who wrote a book, Gods and Monsters, and it was all about ASPCA and animal rights. Was actually I found fascinating reading this book because I had no idea that they were tied with children's rights. At the same point in history, when animals got rights, so did children. Before then, people could just do what they wanted to their kids and nobody cared. And they came together for the same reason.
So what is this primate possession law?
Yeah, so now...
You can't own
recently,
a primate?
This is actually like a week or two ago. They passed a law, because before recently in Arkansas, it was in 2013, it became illegal to possess and breed many primates, no matter who you were. If you had a zoo or a scientific research center, didn't matter. It was illegal. And they've changed the law. And now zoos and organizations can keep and own them. But the thing about this news story is now there's Monkeygate going on in Arkansas because now people think that people will now start getting gorillas and things and keeping them as pets, and there's people going freaking out that all these places and now can keep primates again.
Funny. Because of the zoo exemption?
Yes.
People will declare themselves to be a zoo?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
In Arkansas.
Zoo. Yeah.
Nice.
And then there's a new monkey.
See, I don't think this monkey's that new. I'm pretty sure I've seen this monkey.
It's a couple weeks.
And it's not a monkey, right?
It's a month or two.
Is it a monkey?
It's a monkey.
Is it a monkey?
It's a monkey.
Are you sure it's a monkey?
It's a new monkey
species.
It's not
species. An ape.
It's a, nope. It's a
it's not a chimp.
It's a new monkey species.
Show me.
It's in the Congo. It was lost because it lives deep in the forest.
Like Bigfoot.
And this is the one that kills me. And also because it was used for bushmeat.
Yeah, no, I think I've seen this because that's the saddest part about it. Because when you see this monkey, you couldn't eat it. It's got a face.
I know.
It's got a very human like face. So what's the name of it?
And it's blue. And that's the reason why.
What's it called?
I forget. I'll get to that. But the reason why this...
You're going to have to start doing the show again because you're not doing research.
I've been there. She's going ahead. She's trying to jump ahead. The reason why this is in blue news, the shape of its penis is what tipped them off to make it...
Go
make
on.
Make sure
go
it
on
was set. Actually specific.
What kind of a monkey is it? What kind of a monkey is it?
This is only the second time this has happened in the 28 years. She's like to jump ahead, doesn't she?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I ruin your
pun? It's a lasua. And commonly called an owl face monkey.
It's that one. It's the sad looking one. So if you Google new monkey species and go to images, you'll see it.
Yeah, see, we found it.
Yeah, right? Who could eat
cute,
that?
It's cute, isn't it? Now imagine eating that for bushmeat. Thinks that?
You couldn't eat that. He looks like he should be in an ad for like an antidepressant.
Yeah.
He's the sad monkey that doesn't have Zoloft. It's
who would go through the jungle and say, kill those? I mean, come on. But anyway, they found another one, and it's the first time it's happened in like 28 years. So that's kind of cool. And then this will be used as a reason why Bigfoot is still around, as Tim Farley has said first, because that's the kind of thing that the people that believe in that kind of thing will say. Well, they found this new monkey, so obviously Bigfoot's out there.
An unusual-looking penis has led to the recent discovery of a new monkey species.
Yes.
The white... cheeked macaque is found in the remote highland forests of southeast Tibet.
I didn't put the name down because the joke is just right there.
You're a cheeky monkey. It's a macaque with a weird-looking penis.
Yes.
This is quality podcasting, ladies and gentlemen.
Right itself.
It's up there?
So it was identified by its distinctive rounded penis, which is different than the arrow-shaped genitalia found on other species in the area. It's named for the pale whiskers on its chin and the side of its face, not the shape of its penis.
No.
Oh.
But I tried, I avoided the whole macaque thing, but you put it there. You put it out there.
Had to go there. I understand. It's all right.
You left it
okay.
on the table there.
Well, it's quality monkey news.
It is. So there's our monkey news segment.
So we have
one piece of new woo.
It's there's never new woo, it's just old woo that's come back.
Yeah. So I couldn't believe this.
Oh, yeah. So this is the teacher that's allergic to Wi-Fi, right?
Yes, this is a new thing. It's in L.A., this public school teacher is Laura Anora Lawson, and she got granted the ability to be in a location to teach where there's no Wi-Fi or electromagnetic stuff. That's impossible. She decided that she got this disease because the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power installed one of those smart meters. We have this here in Atlanta now. I'm in the water industry,
meters.
So if you go to a water meter at home at your house, you'll notice that there's a little gray thing that's on it. Before that, they had to open up the thing and actually read the meter. Now they just drive a car by, and that thing actually beams the
thing. So what would be the homeopathy for electromagnetic hypersensitivity? How would you inoculate yourself with Wi-Fi?
Piece of wire, maybe? I don't know.
How do you dilute it? Is that like a really weak signal?
Grind it up.
Like,
yeah.
The weaker your signal is, the more allergic you are.
The funny part is, about 3 or 4 years ago, we covered this on Skepticality. I had Michael Cruz, who's of the Bad Science Watching. This same thing started to happen all over the place in Canada, and it became to the point where schools couldn't even teach kids properly because they weren't allowed to have Wi-Fi, so they had no connection to the internet at all.
My favorite story relating to this, and if you don't know, you know, whenever they blinded test this stuff, people can never detect.
That's why I brought up
there or not.
That's why anybody watched the Better Call Saul. Remember that scene where he said, you know, all the machines, everything. So she turned off the machine, but she didn't. But he got better. But she didn't actually do it. She turned off the sound, and so he got better.
I think it was in South Africa, and it wasn't Wi-Fi, but it was a cell phone tower, and there was some particularly big-looking cell phone tower, and the people in the neighborhood convinced themselves that it was hurting their health, and they were literally out there protesting, like marching around protesting, and someone from the company showed up and said, "You're protesting that tower?" Yeah, we're protesting that tower. It's ruining our health. That tower's been turned off for like 6 months. We had a technical problem. It turned out it wasn't doing anything, and they were absolutely convinced that it was ruining their health.
Yeah, well, the sun gives you more radiation of that sort than anything else by a factor of a billion.
Yeah.
So where do we go from here, Swoopy?
Was that a legitimate open question? What's next? Well,
when is Swoopy coming back?
It's not like I went anywhere.
Now, if anybody has any questions, raise your hand and...
Hey, I have a question.
All right.
So you know, Tim and all of y'all talked a lot about skepticality in the past. What about the future? And not in terms of skepticality, because you kind of hinted at that, but in terms of skepticism, we've talked about how it changed coming here. Any thoughts about going forward?
So I think anything that skepticism is going to do to continue to outreach is going to be online, but it's still also going to have to be coupled with traditional media. I know folks are talking about getting, and I don't know if it's happened, the closest thing being an atheist television channel. You know,
I think American Atheist runs one on Roku.
Yeah, but that's on the Roku. So, right. I mean, that wasn't the original intent. A lot of skeptics have kickstarted projects to do documentaries. Documentary films about our subjects have been really big lately. Going Clear and the online version, or the HBO version of that book, is amazing. And a lot of this stuff is stuff that skeptics have been saying for a really long time. This documentary about James Randi, called An Honest Liar, has been really, really highly regarded. It did really well at all the film festivals.
I've
and it's the kind
it.
Of stuff that's getting mainstream media press. And so, you know, in the beginning, it was about that. It was about getting small niche skeptics out into the wider audience, and that's totally happening. I would like to say that, you know, I think podcasts and things like that are going to continue to help push it along, but it's still a feeder venue for a bigger thing. Neil deGrasse Tyson had his own podcast for quite a while, and it was very popular, but now he's on TV. So I assume he's going to keep doing the podcast, but he's on TV, and which is great. That's exactly what we need, more science on TV at a late night time slot. I mean, he's the science David Letterman. Who would have thunk it? And it's really cool. So I think it's more of that. So I think what it has to be is getting it outside of places like this room, and social media will help, and online stuff will help, but we always said that it was science and skepticism from all walks of life. So, you know, everybody can name about five or six scientists and popular famous skeptics they know, but how diverse are those people, right? And so we need younger people. We need women a lot. People from other cultures. It's getting better, but it's not anywhere near what I like. I love it. I keep seeing these crowd shows from, you know, like Mythbusters is on tour, but it's a room full of white college guys, and white college guys are already our audience. And I love white college guys, but they're not the people I need to get to. We need to get to other people. I've learned a lot of really great things about the way that science is being taught, but it's not enough, and it's not good enough. I was looking up stories to talk about today, and there are more challenges. Kansas, Louisiana, Tennessee, they're all changing their science curriculum. They're allowing for alternative views to be taught. And so we were talking about that 10 years ago. We're still talking about it.
I was saying that one fly that Tim thing, the whole religious freedom. It's the same thing that's going on now. It's the same thing.
So, yeah. I don't know. I hope the future is that we can escape the past. Keep moving forward.
Trying to look at the numbers. I did that survey of podcasts. In the last couple of years, I've been looking at skeptic conventions, which is also another thing that, you know, how do you define a skeptic convention? There's science events and skepticism events and atheism events, but there's definitely been a huge growth there, and it actually parallels that podcast curve. There definitely, through 2008, 2009, 2010, there was a huge growth in all of it. And in the events, especially when you get out into the atheist events and the Sunday Assembly things coming up later this month and all these other types of events that are related, tremendous growth. It used to be there were, you know, basically the national organizations in each country would have an event each year. So you'd have, you know, maybe you know, 5 or 6 events in the United States, and then maybe a couple in Germany and a couple in the UK, and so you could pretty much count the annual conventions, you know, on a one sheet of paper. And now there's well over 120, I think, annual events, and some of them are not quite annual. Some of them are, you know, kind of the local regional events sometimes don't do it every year. But just everywhere, you know, like nearly every state in the U.S. has some sort of an event going on. So there's just this tremendous amount of growth. And there needs to be that, because one of the things about skepticism is there's all these different topics. You know, there's a Scientology and homeopathy and just some of the things we've mentioned here. And each one of those topics deserves people to be focused on them. So, you know, it pays to focus in and make something your topic area and become the subject matter expert on it. And because each one of those topics is going to need somebody to focus on it, or details are going to get missed. So I don't know what to predicting the future is really hard, but I guess, you know,
we're against
more,
it.
More and more and more Soviet and more term. More spreading out of different groups and different subgroups and things like that. And as we do that, we need to take heed of the fact that we are spreading out and diversifying and still maintain connections back to our old friends and our allied groups, because I do see a trend, particularly online, where people lose track of each other. They get focused on their thing and they don't realize they have potential allies over here and over here and over here. You know, maybe this group is focused on homeopathy and this group is focused on something else, and you could use them to help you on your project, but you have to remember to ask them. So try to maintain those bonds and maintain those connections.
I think the future is just to keep going and to keep innovating and to keep talking, because the message is getting out there. I mean, this year, you know, supplements are being investigated.
Yeah.
Finally. I mean, and it started, you know, on a local state level, but it's going to move, and it's big retailers like Walmart are being called out for the fact that their supplements have no supplements in them. Now, this isn't talking about the fact that these supplements are, you know, not efficacious, and that's the next step. But if you're being defrauded because what you're saying you're being sold is not what you're being sold, then that's big, and that's a skeptical topic from time immemorial. And
there's no hips and roses.
It's current and it's happening, and it's you know. So while it seems like a frustrating endeavor and a lot of people quit organized skepticism, every once in a while something really good happens, and it reminds you that, you know, it's really worth doing.
Tim, I wanted to ask you about that that graph which you showed, that the number of podcasts which have increased.
Yeah.
So I had like a basic question: that do you think the percentage of people, like listening to podcasts or doing the research, the kind of research which you do, do you feel that the percentage is changing over the years? Because the numbers can't like see that. The internet's growing, people are having access, population is growing. So you see that numbers are actually true for percentage?
Yeah, that's really hard to... There's no good universal rating service for podcasts. You have to kind of rely on the podcast itself to tell you how many times it's being downloaded. And
although Arbitron actually does measure them.
Yeah, but...
It's weird, I know.
Yeah, it's not publicly available data. And so it's really hard to know whether or not the more podcasts is just splitting up a pie that already exists, or more people are actually coming in there. And the same thing is true of conferences. It's hard to get accurate attendee numbers for conferences, so it's hard to know whether or not that we, now that we have umpteen more conferences, whether the same people are just going to different conferences and it's not a larger conference audience. I suspect it's a little of both. But it's very hard to measure that. And the thing with podcasts is, even if you know the download rates, you don't necessarily know the listen rates, because a lot of people subscribe to things and then forget about it. And, you know, I know I have podcasts cycling through my phone all the time that I don't always get to. So
Thank you guys so much.
Yes.
I watching people, you know, sitting and watching people talk into microphones is not always the most exhilarating thing, so I appreciate it. Yeah, if you like watching people talking into microphones, I do encourage you to go to conferences because that happens a lot, but a lot of other fun things happen too.
Yeah.
So thank you again for coming, and my name is Swoopy, and I occasionally do this thing called Skepticality.
I'm Derek. I sometimes do this with Swoopy. Otherwise, I do it every 2 weeks.
And I'm Tim.
And usually on every 2 weeks.
Unless you catch me on a bad week.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
All right, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah.
Figure.